12 minutes past the hour of 8, and this is now due to popular demand. I've asked Jake Shepherd, he's a director at Synthesis, to come back into studio. Jake, welcome back, and thank you for making yourself available.
Yeah, thanks, Howard. I really appreciate the opportunity again.
Well, we got tremendous feedback last time you were in studio. Last time you were here, we spoke about it, followed a Mandela Day a presentation that you gave, and we spoke about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Today we're having another, taking our conversation in another direction, and we're talking about crucial conversations. And
crucial conversations is very close to my heart, and I'm sure yourself and your listeners can think back to times when they had conversations that they walked away from and thought either they shouldn't have had that conversation or they should have done it one hell of a lot better. And I think I was one of those people who actually didn't do it particularly well. And I had a friend of mine who recommended a book to me called Crucial Conversations by a group of people called Vital Smarts. And when I read that book, it basically took on board those learnings. From a business point of view, my relationships with colleagues and clients improved, and even personal interactions improved.
So what is that? That is being able to have a conversation that is a very difficult conversation, but having it in a way that produces a very positive outcome versus either no outcome or a destructive outcome.
Yeah, so essentially, if you had to think of what defines a crucial conversation, it really is defined by three things. One, emotions are running high.
Right.
There's a lot at stake. And opinions differ. And you tend to know about these conversations when they ambush you, when you least expect them. Your stomach tells you, your emotions tell you. And then most of us, when we're in that sort of a mode,
right,
the adrenaline starts pumping, which right, basically is your fight or flight hormone. Blood rushes to the arms and legs and leaves the brain.
That's a real thing.
Real physiological thing. I think the way I think of it is maybe we were designed for the green jungle but not the concrete jungle. Because right, actually today when we have adverse, in the good old days when you're in the jungle and the lion pops out, you need to run away.
You don't need to have a conversation.
You don't need to have a conversation with a lion. In fact, from an evolutionary point of view, those who stopped to have the conversation with a lion got eaten.
Right.
So basically today we need to actually learn to have those conversations, and it's really trying to some extent fight against our
physiology. It's almost counterintuitive, or not counterintuitive, but counter to how we programmed, because we programmed not to think rationally when we...
Well, we don't. And that's just because the blood's left our brain. So it's, and I think you actually often see it when you have a contentious conversation.
Or a road rage is a good example.
Yeah, road rage is certainly a good example. But even just in a day-to-day thing, you always think of a great comeback line 4 hours after the conversation.
Yes. Lying in bed, I can tell you I've had the best conversations with people. why are you laughing, Zanati? Is that true of you as well?
Yes, I'm just thinking also of that listener that hated you until they died. I'm sure they had a lot of conversations with you in their head lying in
the
bed.
One that hated me until the day she died.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things I want to, when you're faced with a crucial conversation, you really have one of three options. You can either run away from the conversation, or you could have the conversation and do it really badly, or you could have the conversation and do it well. And I think one of the things that dawned on me is that you can actually learn to have that conversation and learn to do it well.
That's interesting. So we don't need to be born with this knowledge.
No, not at all. In fact, if anybody is an example of somebody who wasn't born with this knowledge, it was myself.
All right. So let's break this down. First of all, a crucial conversation is what?
So a crucial conversation really, I suppose, at the end of the day, starts off with yourself. When we look at people, the way we see people, it's not really who those people really are. It's the way we feel about those people.
Okay.
And that is really governed by what we want with those people in terms of what is, we have to look inwards and we have to say, well, what do we actually want for ourselves? What do we want for the other person?
Right.
And what do we want for the relationship?
Okay.
And if that's really what we wanted, is the way I'm behaving now really the way I should be behaving? And that's really a starting point.
Goal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's to have a really honest insight in terms of what do you actually want with this other person.
Got it.
And once that's your starting point, everything changes because now you're not faced with this villain on the other side of the table.
Right.
You're faced with somebody who you can work with and that you can actually achieve a, you know, a good relationship going forward. And really what you're trying to achieve is you're trying to achieve dialogue.
Okay.
You really want to be able to speak to the person, get their input, find out what they think, and then give your input as well. And I suppose really at the core of it is how do we create conditions in ourself and in the other person so that dialogue becomes the path of least resistance. And many of the times what we find is that we don't do things in such a way, and we either have people moving to silence, being really sarcastic, or masking their feelings,
So that silence as well is
diverting
the conversation away.
Or other people, in other cases, people move to violence. They start controlling, they start labeling, you're such a Neanderthal.
Right.
And effectively, whenever you see that, whenever you see those aspects coming up in a conversation, you know that that person's feeling particularly unsafe. And actually to have the conversation when they're feeling unsafe is not a particularly good idea.
So can you change, is it better to change to try and make them feel safe or to have that conversation another time?
Well, those are often the same thing. So a tactic to actually get to a point where you're feeling safe is just to step out of the conversation and say, listen, this is something that's really important. We need to pick this up. Right now I'm not in a state where I feel I can do it justice. Can we pick this up tomorrow? So it's not about dodging the conversation. It's about having it, but it's about recognizing the fact that you can only really have that conversation when you're in the right frame of mind. John Gottman did some interesting studies on stonewalling, which is a form of going to silence where you basically cross your arms and you just basically are not really interested in another person giving any input.
Right.
And he actually had heart monitor on people, and you're seeing that their heart rate goes up to like 140 beats per minute, and they are, even though it looks like they're not interested and they're not there, their adrenaline is pumping. And he actually did an experiment where he basically walked into the room and said, well, you know, we've got problems with our equipment. We'd like you to continue this conversation, but let's first fix the equipment. And he obviously didn't have problems with his equipment, but basically what he wanted to show that when he actually gave a bit of time for people to calm down and settle down, and then he went into the room and said, well, now resume, it was a totally different conversation.
So he actually got that heartbeat to slow a little bit, the adrenaline to dissipate slightly.
We need to recognize the fact that we can't always have a conversation when we want to. We have to actually be in the right frame.
And we're recognizing it for both ourselves and for the person that we're having it with. Is that correct?
For sure. So it's effectively, you need to see your own style and distress. Do you go to silence violence and recognize that in others?
Okay, we're going to come back to this conversation, trying to understand what it is when people either go to silence or violence. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. I am chatting to Jake Shepherd. We're talking about crucial conversations. We're talking about crucial conversations. Jake, we've identified now that we're in one of these conversations, and what that means is it's really an important conversation to have.
Sure. It's a hard conversation that we're going to have to have now.
Right.
But we can't have it now. We have to step out of the context of the conversation and we have to make it safe.
Right. So how do we make it safe?
So there are two aspects to making it safe. Mm-hmm. One aspect is you have to establish mutual respect, and then you have to establish mutual purpose.
Okay.
Now, a saying I really like is that respect is like air. When it's not there, it's the only thing anybody can think about.
Mm-hmm.
But when it is there, no one even notices it.
Love
so
that.
You,
absolutely.
You have to apologize. If that's required, you've got to reestablish that mutual respect. And then you've got to make sure that you're both rowing in the same direction. You have to reestablish mutual purpose. And really what that's about is it's almost to some extent, you've got to think, well, the other person might think I've got an ulterior motive for having this conversation. And the way you head that off is you say, well, that's not what I'm trying to do. You use something called contrasting. That's not what I'm trying to do. This is what I'm trying to do. I don't have all the answers. I'm coming to you to talk about potential solutions, and we can find a solution
together. And that's trying to find purpose, mutual purpose.
You have to have mutual purpose. Without mutual purpose, it's impossible to actually.
So even in a conversation that just came out of nowhere, suddenly you find yourself in a difficult but crucial conversation, you have to still. Don't confuse purpose with agenda.
Yes.
You didn't need an agenda beforehand. You're in it.
That person has to feel that you're on their side. And because unless you actually are on their side, there's going to be this constant combative nature, and you're not going to be able to have a safe environment to actually get all the facts on
so
the table.
So let's assume you're talking to an employee and it's a difficult conversation. They're underperforming. Things aren't going well. It's very important to establish, that the reason that we're having this conversation is to get you back on track so that we succeed here.
100% right.
Okay. So that's
exactly what they would want as well. So that now you can have a safe conversation and you can
reassure them.
So if you can make it safe, you can almost have any discussion.
Right.
It's only when it's unsafe that almost all discussions are off the table.
Right, so because you don't know in which direction you're going. It's chaos.
Yeah, and you don't know what the agenda is.
The same thing is in, I would imagine, in conflict with your children, with your spouse, with a friend.
In everything.
Yeah. So try and 100%. Establish what you'd like to gain from the conversation, and hopefully the other person wants to gain the same thing.
And then part of actually just, I suppose, moving on is to realize, well, where am I? You know, I've also got emotions and I'm also feeling particularly stressed out. And it's, well, what do I do in order to unpack my own emotional state? And I think the first thing you have to realize is that you actually create your emotional state. That other person tangentially might be involved, but it's really you. And one way to truly understand that is to understand something called the path to action, where you see or hear something, you tell yourself a story, and then you feel, and then you act out. And the way you feel is really embedded in that story.
Well, give me an example of that.
So an example, you might be running late, maybe not running late. You were on time for the airport. You're in the check-in queue, LL flight, and the security guards are taking forever, and you're inching forward slowly one thing at a time. And you thought you were on time, but really now you're not so sure if you're on time. Mm. And all of a sudden somebody cuts in front of you.
Right.
And you think, who the hell do they think they are? And, you know, I thought I was, now I'm definitely going to be late, first of all.
Right.
And what sort of a doormat does that person think I am? And how do you feel? And if you really had to think how you feel at that moment, it's not particularly charitable.
No.
But then you could always, if you knew a different story, if you knew that person was jumping the queue because they were on their way to their parents' funeral and they only just got the flight and their flight actually leaves before yours does. How do you feel now? And both of those are equally valid stories, but both create totally different emotional states.
Your emotion changes completely.
And really what we need to be able to do is when we're feeling particularly emotional, is actually identify what those emotions are.
Well, especially if we don't know.
Exactly.
And we're making a whole lot of assumptions.
Are we frustrated? Are we, work out what those emotions are and then try and work back to what the facts were and separate those facts out from the stories. And as soon as we can do that, we can then tell ourselves a different story.
Mm. Absolutely brilliant. And so we change the way in which we are feeling in that situation, which changes how we react in that situation.
So Stephen Covey always talks about the habits of highly effective people. So their first habit is a habit of proactivity. Well, what is proactivity as opposed to being reactive? Well, actually being reactive is acting out because of your emotional state. Being proactive is being able to manage your emotional state so that you can choose how to act out. And that's what we need to learn to do. And the way we do that is through telling ourselves a different story. And it's not necessarily that first story is wrong, and that it's, and we're going to ignore it. We actually are going to deal with it. I mean, in our discussions with that person, we want to actually broach that story. But at the end of the day, unless we can tell ourselves another story, and maybe one way of doing it is just say, why would a reasonable, rational, and decent person do that to us? And when you frame it that way, you can come up with a story that doesn't paint them as the villain and you as the victim.
So we have to rewrite our story. We have to rewrite the narrative in order to change our emotions. And then you're in a much better position.
And then you can have the conversation.
To have the conversation yourself.
Sure.
Right.
And then you can, basically, you need to have that conversation. And part of that conversation, you need to speak persuasively, but not abrasively. And really what you're trying to do with those, when you're talking about this thing, you've got two sets of skills. You've got what skills and you've got how skills. So your what skills is you're going to talk about the facts. Facts aren't that emotive. Everyone agrees this is what happened, but you need to discuss the facts and say these are the facts, but the facts aren't enough. You still need to tell the story that really upset you, but the way you're going to tell that story is fundamentally different from the facts. the facts, you state them, this is what happened. But your stories, you don't state as fact. You don't care about me.
That's stating
a story that you're telling to yourself
as
a fact. What you need to do is start talking tentatively. Perhaps you were unaware that by doing what you did, it made me feel that you didn't value what I bring to the party.
To switch that to say what I felt was ABC, because then you're taking responsibility for your feelings.
Well,
you're not making that person responsible for
your feelings. You're acknowledging that that's your story and those are your feelings.
Right. And
that other person might not have intended that. And that's so important because you've now left the door open for them to tell you their story. Because you haven't actually stated your stories as fact, they feel that the invitation's open for them to actually address what they felt and what they saw in that interaction. And they aren't then necessarily contradicting your facts. They agreeing with your facts, they might be contradicting your story, which we can all happily live with. And then we need to just listen to their path. What did they go through? And that's really learning your listening skills. And I think the most important part is actually listen and don't get defensive. Because if you get defensive, you're just going to start a cycle again.
Absolutely.
And the way you do that is just be curious. Turn on your brain and just say, I wonder why they acting in the way they are. And then just listen and hear them out. And
absolutely fascinating. Unfortunately, horrifically, we are out of time. But Zanati's got something
to
say.
Do we need David in this Thursday? Because I just feel like I've got a healing session.
Do you feel healed? Are you ready to go and have your crucial conversations?
I'm also one of those very defensive people that just want to go and I don't want to listen. So I've definitely learned something today.
All right. So crucial conversation. You have to listen. But you've actually, what's interesting about it is you've actually got to, before anything, is listen to yourself. Before you even get to have that conversation with another person, it's all about happening
with yourself. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. You know what's so interesting? As you were saying it, I was looking at some SMSs that were coming through. And with an SMS, it's the same thing, that you don't really know what this is about. And here's an SMS that I just got. It says, Howard, you always refuse to accept, to refuse the reality of white genocide in South Africa. Why? Now, I mean, we weren't having that conversation. I don't really know where it comes from. But it's exactly that. You get a message that is a bit odd, given the context, because we aren't talking about that. And then you just, I become defensive. Actually, I do that. And instead of taking a step back and saying, okay, what is really going on here? Is this a conversation that we need to have? And how do we have this conversation in a constructive way that is not defensive? But I'm recognizing what this made me feel. And it was so interesting that came through, you know, and with SMSs in particular, you don't know context. There's just not enough for it. It's a very, 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 very interesting. And now we have run 3 minutes. We never run 3 minutes late.
Never.
We really don't. Jake, I'm going to blame you for this. But you know, don't be defensive, Jake. It's a safe space here. Thank you as always. Very, very interesting conversation. I think there's actually more to talk about in this, isn't there?
There's a lot more to talk about. But I think we've run out of time, and maybe another time.
Yeah, we certainly will do that. Time is 8:33. Jake Shepherd joining us in a studio. He was back by a public demand. So great that he was with us.